Well, as I recall, last week we were talking about gardening on the show, and we decided that, you know, we do this in the growing season. We do these programs every month, and for a long time, Sandy Mason has been doing the shows with us. She's horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County, and we used to start in March, and we thought this year we're really eager for spring. We'll start in February. We'll start a month early. We'll really get things going. So today, we wake up and we look outside, and what do we see? 3 inches of snow. It's 28 degrees currently outside of our studios, so we figured, okay, we're not going to give up. We're going to try even harder. So this morning on the program, we'll be talking about gardening, and Sandy is here once again. And joining us by telephone, maybe one of America's best-known gardeners, Barbara Damrosch is the guest. She's authored or co-authored a number of books on gardening. Perhaps two that she's best known for. One is The Garden Primer, which would be a good book for maybe somebody who is just starting out. It has a lot of good basic information on gardening, on how to prepare, on planning, on plant selection, on taking care of your garden. And also another that's really interesting. It's titled Theme Gardens. And that has suggestions for different kinds of gardens organized around particular themes, again, with information and advice on planning and laying the garden out and particular kind of plants. It's really nicely illustrated. So if you're interested, you might want to look at them. I know her books are available, should be in the library and the bookstore. You just go right there, go to the gardening section and see what you can find. Part of the reason for us doing this is also to take an opportunity to talk about the upcoming Garden Day for this year, for 2001, an event that's being sponsored by Extension in Champaign County. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be taking place this weekend, and Barbara Damrosch will be one of the featured speakers. So she will be here at the end of the week. This will be on Saturday. And we'll talk more about that, and we would certainly welcome your questions. Maybe you'd like to call in and talk with either or both of our guests. You're looking out for a little bit of a gardening advice, or maybe you'd just like to, you know, call and say hi.
That's good, too.
Any of that is fine. 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana, and toll-free 800-222-9455. And let's say to Barbara Damrosch, hello.
Hi.
Thanks for talking with us today.
Oh, great to be on the air, David.
So what's the weather like? Where are you today?
Sunny, but it was the big zero when I woke up this morning. And we have at least a foot of snow still on the ground.
Well, that's Maine for you, I guess.
Yeah, it's usually not so snowy on the coast, but we had a snowy year this winter. Yeah,
well, actually, we did too, at least earlier on. We had for us a lot of snow, and because it stayed cold, the snow hung around for a while, so it seemed a little bit more wintry even to us than, you know, what we expect this part of the country. So
right.
I think we're getting tired of it. We're thinking, all right, it's time for us to move on. And I'm looking for that day when I'm going to see the snowdrops in my yard, because we have some, and when they come up, it gives me hope.
Oh, that's always a wonderful sign of cheers you up.
Yeah. Well, let's say we have a caller, so rather than make them wait, let's go ahead and talk with them.
Sure.
In
good.
Urbana, line one. Hello.
I read years ago about a trick that I've never tried. I wanted to ask about it. I read somewhere that in northern climes, there were certain veggie seeds, cool weather seeds, plants such as spinach and lettuce that you could actually plant in February by just putting the seeds on top of the snow. That way you would get them in the ground early enough, which is always a problem with cool weather crops for me.
Hmm.
Is that true? Have you ever heard about that?
I've heard of snow seeding. We do certain green manures snow seeded. I have not tried it with vegetable crops for the garden. With things like lettuce, I tend to just direct sow them as soon as the soil can be worked, rather than do transplants as a rule. And doing that, sometimes you can really still get a pretty early crop. But
the problem is working the soil early enough, because it's always wet until July or something. You know, that's hyperbole, but it tends to stay wet a long time.
One way to get around that is to have a cold frame. Because you
hello, I'm sorry. To have what?
A cold frame.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to do that.
At least he's honest.
Just a big box on the ground with glass on top.
Yeah, actually, I have had some experience using actually planting spinach very early, and my theory is certainly in our area. I'm not sure about Barbara's area, but certainly in our area, I think people tend to till way too much anyway.
Yes.
And I think if you have halfway decent soil, and we're very lucky here that generally most of our soils are halfway decent already without us doing much of anything, I think most of the time there's no reason why you can't go ahead and just seed into the soil that's there and don't till it, don't work it up early. Because as you know, we don't want to do it too when it's too wet, because then you just form clods. Right. And what I have actually done is actually put my seed out, and then if it is something that really needs a little bit of soil on top, I've just used leftover potting soil or leftover soilless mix or whatever I happen to have for my transplants, and I just put that on top, and I don't even mess with the soil that's there.
Okay.
The thing I've had good luck with is overwintering spinach, and we're even colder here than where you are. If you put some straw around it, you can bring it right through the winter. It looks kind of beat up, but you know, when the days start to get warm and the sun comes out and all the snow melts, it really starts to regrow. And you can just keep it going.
Well, that's interesting.
And if they can do that in Maine, I'd say they can probably do that here.
That spinach that you planted for a fall crop?
Beg your pardon? Yes, a fall crop that winters over. Now, of course, you couldn't keep that same crop going indefinitely because it'll start to go to seed.
Is spinach a biannual?
Yes, it is. That's why it bowls.
Yeah, okay. Okay, well, thank you very much.
All right, thanks for the call. Well, you, Barbara, you and your husband, Elliot Coleman, are really sort of famous for developing methods so that you can grow vegetables and have crop year-round, which is again, amazing, if you know, no matter, unless you live in Southern California. But to me, that's an amazing idea. But it's even more amazing when you realize that, yeah, you guys live in Maine, and it does tend to be a little colder. And the growing season, I'm sure, is shorter. Well, the way we think of a growing season would be shorter.
Yeah, it is. I think it is a little shorter. We have very long, cold springs, even more so than inland in Maine. Even areas north of us will have an earlier spring because we're on the coast. So we're always trying to push the envelope and trying to make spring happen sooner and fall go later. And you know, before we knew it, we were just doing it year-round. And it's really just two simple things. Choosing winter-hardy crops, things that prefer to grow in cold weather, and then giving them just real simple protection. I mentioned a coal frame. We have also put simple plastic greenhouses over coal frames, and that's like sort of putting a parka over a sweater. Each layer of protection moves you a zone and a half to the south. So by the time we have a simple coal frame inside a simple growing tunnel, we're in Georgia. The other thing you can do is just put Remay, which is sort of a brand name, but it's become the generic name for those spun-bonded polyester floating row covers. If you put those on wire wickets over the crops inside a greenhouse, that's almost as good as having coal frames in there.
Mm-hmm. Now, one thing that I read, though, the growth of the plants is dependent on how much daylight there is, and there is a certain point in the year that comes when things really don't, when things really stop. Did I have it right?
Stop. Yes, from late November until about the second week in February, growth is very slow. But even now, we're at the coldest point of the winter right now. We had the coldest temperatures today we've had all year, but a week ago, everything just started to burst forth in terms of growth in our greenhouses. And these are unheated greenhouses for the most part, just because the day length had started to change. And we're in the 44th parallel. I suspect you are, what, a little south of that?
To be honest, I would have to pull the atlas out and take a look. I'm not exactly sure.
But I noticed the same thing myself, Barbara, in that the last couple weeks I've noticed an amazing amount of growth, even on houseplants and things that are indoors.
Yeah.
Suddenly they started sending out this new growth and they hadn't done anything all winter long. So I think you're absolutely right. This is kind of that point where we're starting to see some new growth, and certainly be a great time to start thinking about maybe doing some of these really early crops.
Right. Yeah, the big eye-opener for us was looking across this 44th parallel and seeing where it ended up in Europe. And you would expect it to be way up north. Well, it's not. It's Genoa. It's Avignon. It's, you know, it's in southern France and northern Italy, central Italy. And you have the Mediterranean climate over there. But with the same day length, they're growing crops all the way through the winter there. taking advantage of their Mediterranean climate. And even north of there, in the northern European countries, they're growing things in the wintertime. So just by giving a little plastic protection or glass, we can create that Mediterranean climate, but we have something that's much more difficult for them to create, which is wonderful light in the U.S.
Mm-hmm. It looks like we're like kind of right on the zone, right on the line between zones 5 and 6. And I'm not sure that that's really, going to be hugely different from where you live. Yeah, I think it probably gets...
We're in the colder part of zone.
Oh, you're in the colder... Oh, okay.
So we get to minus 15 often in the winter.
Okay.
And you probably have more sunlight than we do.
Yeah, I would expect probably so. Yeah.
Our biggest problem here is that we often get some very, very cloudy days. So even though we're getting some extra sunlight there, we get into these dreary, dreary days where we, day after day, nothing but cloudy weather.
So. Yeah. Well,
but Europe is that way too, and yet there they are growing all those.
Yeah,
we're,
so we have no excuses, do we?
Yeah, right. Really urge you to try this.
Our I think Brian Wagner, our guy on the control board, says we're at 40 degrees north. That's
40,
what we are.
Okay, so you have a longer day than we do. Yeah. You can do it even better than we can.
All right. Our guest this morning by telephone, Barbara Damrosch. She's written a number of books, written or co-authored a number of books about growing things in the home landscape. The Garden Primer is one of hers. Also, Theme Gardens. Here in studio with us, Sandy Mason from U of I Extension in Champaign County. Coming up this weekend as part of the Garden Day 2001, Barbara Damrosch will be here in our area as one of the speakers. And we'll take a minute to tell people about that, and if they want to be a part of that, let them know how.
Yeah, absolutely. It is this Saturday, February 24th. It runs from 8:30 to 5. It's at the Park Inn and Conference Center, which is on North Cunningham Avenue, so real easy to get to off of I-74. It's going to be a nice variety of things. Besides Barbara Damrosch being our keynote speaker, she's also doing actually a program on fresh food from the garden year-round. So some of these things that she's already mentioned today, you can find out more about that as well in one of her programs. Also having a program on new perennials. You know, that's always the big thing, you know, what kind of perennials are out there. There may be some flowers that are underused. That'll be good. Something that's a little bit different is healthy garden practices. I haven't seen too much maybe written or said about that, but, you know, how do you protect your back? How do you protect your skin? How do we live through gardening? We know that there are certainly some ways to do that that doesn't have to break your back. Ornamental grasses, of course, have a lot of appeal, and certainly in the last few years we've seen a lot of interest in that. Hardy roses. Roses always have that. There seems to be that idea that roses can't be grown around here, they're too tough, they have lots of diseases, you can't get them through the winter, all that kind of stuff. And Greg Stack, one of our University of Illinois Extension educators, are going to dispel all those myths about roses and tell you about hardy roses. How about low-maintenance landscaping? Everybody is looking for that, I think. And Denny Schrock, a University of Illinois instructor, is going to be talking about low-maintenance landscaping. How about uncommonly good trees and shrubs? So we find out those kinds of shrubs and trees that maybe we're not growing that we ought to be growing, and have some good ideas on what to do about that. So that's going to be this Saturday, Garden Day at the Park Inn. People can register by calling our office at 333-7672 at the Champaign County Extension Office, and that is area code 217. It is $60 for the public, but I think people will find that very, very worthwhile. It also includes lunch. If you happen to come that particular day, we may not be able to give you lunch, but certainly if you call ahead of time, we can arrange that for you. So I think that's going to be a great program, and certainly, you know, this time of year, it's nice to sort of chase away the winter blues, and when we get this little bit of snow like we did today, sometimes it's nice to have some info to get us ready for this next year.
Yeah, okay. We have another caller here. If you'd like to talk with our guest, Sandy Mason, Barbara Damrosch, 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana. Toll free anywhere that you can hear us, 800-222-9455. Here's a caller in Downs on our line number 4. Hello.
Hello. I have a wintering over success story. This is so wonderful. I don't know whether you remember, Sandy, I called you. I have frames that are for growing beans that are like, they're just two big open copper frames, and I put string on them, and so they're A-frames. I called you and asked you about what you thought about covering them with plastic, and because I'd always seen hoops that are lower, and these are quite tall, and you said, go for it. So and I planted lettuce. We had fresh salad at Thanksgiving.
Wow.
Out of these. And I used really winter, you know, winter hardy salad things. Mm-hmm. And I just looked in it the other day. I got brave finally and opened it up and looked in it. And I have mesh corn salad that is still green as grass in there.
Wow. That's
great.
Everything
else is pretty much dead. I had arugula pretty late. Mm-hmm. And some of the lettuce. There's still a few straggly, you know, plants of lettuce that are trying to make it through. But the mesh looks wonderful. And when it warms up a little bit, I think it probably is kind of half frozen, and I don't want to cut it now. But when it warms up a little bit, I will.
I'll tell you another good one you can try.
Oh, and excuse me, I have been so inspired by your husband's books. That was one of the reasons that made me finally say, okay, I'm going to do this.
Well, I'll tell him you said that. One of the ones we grow that you could do that would winter over like that is Claytonia. It's the Latin name is Montia perfoliata, but it's usually sold either as Claytonia or miner's lettuce.
Oh, okay.
The California weed, and it comes up a little.
I'm
little
from California. I know that.
With little heart-shaped succulent leaves, and you pick it as if you were picking a bouquet of violets. It's super hardy and really mild and tender, and you could definitely winter that one over.
I'll try that one.
But another one you could winter over is a beet leaf. There's a one called Bull's Blood that's bred for its maroon-colored leaves, and you pick them, you know, while they're little and tender and put them in salads, and that would winter over, too, in your frame.
Beet leaf, and what was the other name you said?
It's the variety name is Bull's Blood.
Oh, okay.
Because of the color.
And that's a beautiful plant. I just saw that at Seed Savers Exchange in Decorah, Iowa. They had that, and I think that's certainly one of the sources for that as well. And beautiful plant. Absolutely beautiful.
I have a question, and this is a completely different topic. Last summer, I brought some iris rhizomes back from my mother, who was moving, and actually, I didn't bring them back. I put them in a trunk that was being moved for us, and we had a big house with movers. And I didn't get them for months and months. And when I finally got them, it was too late to plant them, and they were in plastic bags. I kind of, you know, shoved them in a corner. They still seem to be very moist, and they have little bitty shoots on them. Should I just pot them up?
I think
wait.
I would pot them. I mean, the best time to plant them outdoors is July usually.
Yeah, I know that, but
you could pot them up.
Them.
Sure. I mean, you don't want to keep them too moist, or they'll rot.
Right.
So it's best if they're sort of perched on top of the soil, very shallowly planted, and yeah, you could use them. Do it in containers until it's a good time
and
to set them out.
Plant them out when it's ready.
They're actually amazingly tough plants. I've actually had them root on top of my compost pile.
I have too.
Yeah, so as long as they don't rot, as long as they're not in really wet conditions, they go through an amazing amount of abuse.
Or should I just let them, you know, just let them be out and, you know.
You go ahead, Sandy.
Well, I was going to say, I think I'd go ahead and sort of get a jump start, but I'd put them in pots and sort of get a little jump start for them. If you've got some place where you can sort of get them so they can get plenty of light kind of thing, but I think I would go ahead and pot them up. And then when things start to warm up and dry up a little bit, then I'd probably go ahead and plant them outside.
Okay. Thank you. Well, I want to encourage everybody to do this, you know, under protection over, you know, at least until late fall lettuce, because it was so wonderful to have that at Thanksgiving.
Great.
That's terrific. I'm glad to hear you did that.
They're
even in my front yard. The only place I have sun. And people are stopping and saying, Carol, what are you doing?
Well, the heck
wonderful.
With public opinion.
Oh,
that's
I know.
Nice. Well, thanks for the call.
Garden has always been in the front yard. So,
all right. Well, other questions certainly are welcome if you'd like to call in and talk with our guests. Sandy Mason from U of I Extension in Champaign County, and joining us by telephone, gardening writer Barbara Damrosch, 333-WILL, toll-free, 800-222-WILL. Could you, Barbara, would you talk maybe just a little bit more about some of the things that you can grow this way if you do set up the right kind of protection? We've been talking about various kinds of greens, things that people can use in salads. Are there some other things?
Well, our last caller mentioned mosh. That's spelled M-A-C-H-E. That's one I highly recommend. As she said, it's very cold tolerant. There's a wonderful little Italian green called Minutina. Minutina, that it looks like little deer antlers, and it's related to the plantain that grows in your lawn, but it isn't tough and fibrous like that is. And that's a quite hardy one. Lettuces, up to a point, I have found that the red oak leaf types are the hardiest. Some of the cost lettuces, like Rouge de Ver or Winter Density, those are good. A lot of the oriental greens are very good. If you can find a catalog that specializes in Asian greens, or just that section of any catalog, tatsoi is a very cold hardy crop. The red mustards, not quite as hardy, but still pretty good. Komatsuna, Autumn Poem, there's an edible rape, there's loose leaf Chinese cabbages, there's baby pak choi, joy choi. I would just try anything in a catalog that says likes cold weather and see how it does for you. Hmm. But the main thing is to grow all these things as baby leaf crops. If you try to go big heads of things, whether it's a Swiss chard, whether it's a head of lettuce, whether it's a frise endive, they're going to get pretty beat up. But if you cut and come again these crops, you know, trim them when they're just several inches high and use them in salads and let them keep regrowing, they're much hardier that way.
Okay. Well, and I also, again, want to mention to folks, if you have questions, you want to call in and take advantage of the vast experience here of our two guests, you can do that, 333-9455 for Champaign-Urbana folks, and toll-free 800-222-9455. You mentioned somebody suggested to the first caller cold frame, and he said, "I don't want to go that much trouble." But I guess I'm wondering, well, what sort of is the minimum thing that you really have to do? I mean, how do you go about doing this to make the kind of shelter for the plants that they really need?
Well, it can be very simple. You could just—I usually use lumber that's 2 inches thick, so. Maybe a 2x8 in the south side of the frame facing the sun, and then a 2x12 on the back side, and then a sloping board that connects the two. And people, you know, tend to anchor them to the ground. I mean, you can do that if you want, but if your frame is large and heavy enough, it's not going to really move. And then you can either set just old storm windows on top, which is the traditional way to do it, or you can actually make frames. When I talk at Garden Day on Saturday, I'm going to show some pictures of a nice way to do that so that water runs off and doesn't rot the wood. But usually just one big pane of glass is a little more successful if you can, you know, either build that or find that. And you just slide that glass off to pick or weed or water. One thing you do have to remember with a cold frame is that you need to vent it. You don't want to cook those greens prematurely, not until they make it into the kitchen. So we usually use just a little notch stick that you can vent at 2 inches or 4 inches or 6 inches, et cetera, when it is hot. During the middle of the winter, you don't need to vent it at all because the sun is low in the sky, and you're not going to have that problem. But all the way up until late fall and early spring, when you do get warm sun, it is something you have to be careful of. There are self-venting cold frames. Some of the companies like Johnny Selected Seeds or Gardener Supply or any of those sell ready-made cold frames that, you know, are very easy because you just put them together simply from this kit they send you. And also there's venting mechanisms if you're the kind of forgetful type or if you work during the day and aren't there to vent the cold frame when it suddenly gets warm.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure this is going to sound like a dumb question, but what do you do in terms of watering, or do you need to?
Well, in our climate, we don't really do much watering from, I'd say mid-November up until February or March, because when they're in this protected state, it's almost kind of self-watering. You have a lot of condensation. Mm-hmm. There isn't very much evaporation because the sun is so low in the sky that, you know, it just isn't the kind of weather that leads to evaporation. There's a high water table at that time of year. The soil is pretty moist. I mean, here we are all waiting for our soil to dry out so we can get out into the garden. Well, winter soil is kind of soggy. So as I said, you do have to worry about it in the spring and the fall, or if there's newly seeded crops, we will try to keep them watered. And we actually sow crops all through the winter. When we have a bed that's empty, we'll put a new one in.
Okay. You want to add anything? No, Sandy? Okay. We have a caller here in Champaign to talk with. Line number one. Hello.
Hi. Well, I've got a pretty basic question. Other than putting up a bunch of chicken wire, what do you do about rabbits?
Put up a bunch of chicken wire. We have our yard fenced against deer, and along the bottom of the deer fence, we just have chicken wire that's folded over onto the ground with rocks along it so that, that about a foot of the ground is covered with the chicken wire, and they don't get in. But you have to make sure that that's all intact. The same plastic netting that works for the deer does not work for the rabbits because they'll gnaw right through it.
Yeah, well, what if you don't have a fence and you can't afford to put one up?
Well, that's a problem. I guess you just have to try to make the garden a manageable size that can be fenced, and you know, maybe even scavenge some chicken wire and metal posts. You know, sometimes you can pick up stuff like that. I've done that in the past. Just, you know, somebody's got some metal posts they're throwing out and some used chicken wire. I'll put up a cheap fence.
But really, a fence is it.
So, I'm afraid so.
Yeah. Is this edible crops or is this ornamentals or both?
Oh, both.
Both.
I mean, yeah. The most important thing is to fence the vegetable crops. You know, Mr. McGregor's garden is just rabbit bait.
Yeah. Yeah.
they've decided that it's gourmet heaven in my backyard.
And some years are worse than others. We just had two really bad rabbit years the last 2 years, and we'd never really had much rabbits before. So maybe you're in the middle of a population explosion that could be better next year.
Okay, so if I do manage to get a fence up, I should then put rocks up it too?
What I'm saying is that they will try to sniggle under the fence. And sometimes you can bury the fence a few inches or, you know, 6 inches or so. That's one way to do it. The lazy person's way is what we do is just bend that wire onto the ground at the bottom of the fence. So you leave an extra foot along the ground and then weight it with rocks. And we grow a lot of wonderful rocks in our soil and Maine. And put them there and they can't get through at the bottom.
Okay.
There are some fairly effective repellents for non-edibles, things like some of the ornamentals and stuff. I've actually had pretty good success with some of the Deer Busters type products. One of them actually has that, it's called Bitrex. It's actually supposedly the worst tasting thing in the world. And I know when I was a kid, my brother used to suck his thumb, and they used to put this stuff on his thumb. And I don't know if you remember back when they would do that, but it was Bitrex. It was this stuff that's really poor tasting stuff.
They bite before they find out it tastes bad.
Right, but it keeps them from chewing the rest of it.
Yeah.
So, and it actually, some of those products actually have a taste as well as an odor repellent. And if you try both, you know, since it has both of those things, odor repellent as well as a taste repellent, often they're quite effective. And I've actually had pretty good success with those products, to be honest with you. But they're not labeled for edibles, so they're strictly for ornamentals.
Okay, well, thanks.
All right, thanks.
I guess
I have also heard these stories of people doing things like taking cayenne pepper and mixing it with water and spraying it on the plants.
Yeah.
And, you don't think that really is
going to wash off.
Yeah.
You've got to use an awful lot of cayenne pepper.
Yeah. And you know, the problem always is, you know, sometimes I've heard all these kind of repellents from human hair to blood meal to all these things. And you know, sometimes those things might actually work. But the problem is that with any of these wildlife problems, a lot of it depends on the population. It's just what Barbara was saying. If you have a high population, they're going to eat right through these repellent things. But if the population is fairly low and there's other things for them to eat, you're not going to have quite the wildlife pressure that you would in other circumstances. So sometimes it may work in somebody's backyard and they swear that human hair works, but then in another situation where you have high populations, nothing else to eat, it doesn't work. So unfortunately, a lot of those repellent things may or may not work. And that's why the fencing is probably, unfortunately or fortunately, one of the best things to do.
We have used blood. You know those old-fashioned flip guns, sort of pump things?
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah.
Well, we have filled those with dried blood and just gone down the rows at the farm times of year when, you know, in the fall when the crops are still growing outside and we haven't covered them up, and just, you know, do it every once in a while. And that has been effective, actually.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, the question's welcome. 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. One of the things that I was looking at in getting ready for the show was the book, your book, Barbara, Theme Gardens.
Mm-hmm.
Which
it's temporarily out of print, and that's because we're working on a brand new edition of that that will be out sometime, I think, early this summer.
Well, that's great.
Luck, or late spring, and it will have more pictures, more photographs of real gardens on these themes, and all the information in it will be updated to account for more we know about invasive plants that we don't want to plant in our yards and new varieties of things and, you know, things like that.
Well, the one I had did indeed come from the library, so I'm not sure when this one, I guess 1982. So, well, it's nice to hear that there will be a new version. The garden, I guess, that caught my eye because of the time of year is the winter garden.
Yeah.
And I think it's a really interesting idea that you can make choices about what you put in the garden so that there will be life in it and some color and some interest year-round, including the winter.
Yeah. I've gotten even more interested in that since I moved to Maine. I lived in Connecticut when I wrote that book, and we have at least another month of winter. not all zone fives are created equal, you will find, when you move north. The leaves are off the trees for at least 6 months of the year up here. So I just love to plant things like winterberry and red twig dogwood and birches, anything that's going to look interesting and beautiful in the winter landscape. The other thing I do that I didn't used to do is leave all of my perennials uncut in the fall. I used to be really tidy and compulsive, and I'd go and trim them all back to a few inches and haul away the debris, and the garden looked really proper and put to bed. And I've discovered that since I started leaving all of those dried stems and seed heads, it's better for the wildlife because they have those seed heads to eat during the winter. And birds can hide, find cover in there. But it also just looks more interesting. It's a little bit messy, but when there's a snowstorm, they hold the snow in beautiful ways, especially something like those tall sedums like Autumn Joy. They hold the snow in great big blobs, and then they have this beautiful mahogany color to the seed heads. If you go through the garden, you'll find an awful lot of the plants are beautiful, even in their dead state.
Hmm. I was interested in looking at some of the plants in here because there is an area in my yard, sort of on the side, that's quite shaded, and it's a place that it just does what it wants to do. It's never raked, it's never mowed, but this is the place where a previous owner did indeed put in snowdrop and scilla, which are beautiful, and they're great because, as I said, that's when the snowdrops come up, then you know, okay, winter is going to end. But I was interested in some of the other plants that you talk about in this section, like the winter aconite, for example, that looks really pretty. Other things like that that might thrive in this same area that would put in some more color.
Mm-hmm. Crocuses are great.
Those would be some other things in the way of bulbs that you could use in that same way.
So reliable, you know, especially the kind of bunching types. They'll naturalize. Another one that I really, really love is a little species tulip called Tulipa tarda. It's kind of a star-shaped yellow and white flower, and I've got those growing around an old maple tree, and it's just this huge splash of yellow color on sunny days in the early spring. That's a wonderful one. And Glory of the Snow, Chiona doxa lucilii, beautiful blue flowers, tiny little stars, and that's another early one.
Yeah. And when do you plant those? Is that something
in the fall?
In the fall, okay. So that's something I would have to do
start thinking about it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I have been thinking about it a lot, as a matter of fact. Yeah. Yeah. It could have something to do with the weather. I don't know. Maybe you could talk a little bit more about the winter garden and how it is that you approach that, the whole thing of it, and partly it is looking for things that I guess do have some natural color and that will still have their color, but part I guess is also thinking about the shapes of things, the textures of things that you might not pay attention to, I don't know, the rest of the time or not as much.
Mm-hmm. Well, for instance, ornamental grasses. Sandy mentioned somebody's going to be lecturing on that on Saturday at Garden Day. A lot of those are just splendid in the wintertime. It's just a beautiful pale brown sweep of grass like Calamagrasta acutiflora Carl Forster. Actually, it's Calamagrasta stricta. They changed it. Sorry for being a Latin nerd. The variety name is Carl Forster. It's a wonderful upright grass for the back of the border that just looks splendid all winter long. And some of the native grasses from the American prairie, like Little Blue Stem, have a beautiful color in winter. It's a really russet color. And it's not a grass for a tiny, small, little ornamental garden, but for a sweep of a wild area. I mean, it's just nothing better. Prairie drop seed, however, is one that I use even in an ornamental setting, a small garden. It has a kind of a bushel basket shape with these beautiful flowing leaves, and it turns an interesting color in the fall and sort of russet, but then it turns a pale brown, and it's just things like that. Some of the ground covers that stay evergreen in our woods here, you can often take your cue from what's still green in your woods. Take a walk in the woods in February sometime when it's not snowy, and you can see the ground, and you might see wintergreen or bunchberry or partridgeberry, and those are all things you can grow as ground covers. But buy them from nurseries that propagate them, not ones that dig them up in the wild. That's a big problem these days with natives, especially ground covers.
Yeah. Well, I like the suggestions of the prairie plants, and I would think that a lot of people around here would too, because they were interested in prairie because there once was prairie here, and
yeah,
people are trying to restore it or come close to what there was. And I think that folks are interested in native plants, things that really do belong here. And I guess there's also concern sometimes about introduced plants as well, whether you really want to bring something from someplace else that might get away from you.
Right. It is important to remember.
So is there going to be, in the new theme garden book, is there going to be new themes?
No, I didn't go that far.
I was always curious why you ended up, having a book like Theme Gardens. Was it just something on your own? You sort of discovered that as you were gardening, you were kind of...
Regina Ryan had come up with the idea. She produced the book, and originally, when we first started working on it, it was called 50 Glorious Gardens. And we had a list of at least 50 themes, but we realized that, I had a lot to say about each one, and then it became 30 glorious gardens, 25 glorious gardens, and ended up with 16. And every now and then I think of one that, oh, gee, that ought to be in there, or somebody tells me that they've planted a vampire garden or something like this. But those, the ones I put in there, for the most part, are quite traditional. I did a lot of historical research for that book, things like Grey Gardens and Moon Gardens and Shakespeare Gardens. And those have all been done in Europe and America or sometimes in Asia. The Moon Garden goes way, way back, way back.
And then, is that the one that's actually supposed to look best by moonlight?
Yeah, that's the whole idea. You plant white flowers that are open at night or catch the moonlight. Often they're ones that only bloom at night or only fragrant at night, in order to lure moths that pollinate them. So there's a real whole flower performance going on that most of us don't even know about because we're asleep.
Yeah. So you could have a butterfly garden for the daytime. You could have a moth garden for the night.
Yeah.
Well, I'd like the idea of encouraging people to think and about the garden at different times other than sort of the traditional time, like we mostly think of, what's it going to be like at high summer? But I think all of these gardens really do give you some thoughts about what the garden is going to be like both in fall and in spring, so that there will be still interest in there. And then there's the one that's all about, a lot of it is, what's this garden going to look like in the wintertime? So it'll give you something still to look at.
I think people sometimes think of the garden as kind of a picture rather than a process. It's a thing to look at in a frame, whereas I like to think of it as a part of your life. And I think it's important not to make your garden too ambitious and let it get run away from you. If it's a chore, oh my God, the garden's a mess. I've got to go weed it. It just isn't looking like I want to show it off. And then it's too big. And if it's something you do a little bit on all the time and think about it as part of your life throughout the year, not just kind of a summer romance that It's more enjoyable that way.
Yeah, I like the metaphor. And I guess for me, I think I end up looking at books about gardening in magazines and things, and looking at these fabulous gardens, thinking they're just terrifically beautiful. And then I think I don't have that much time in my life. I certainly can't spend the time that I would guess it would take to maintain, not just to put it in the first place, you know, but to keep it looking that way. And I guess more and more people would have that same sort of feeling that they really like to have an attractive landscape, but they are looking for the low, the low maintenance, the thing that you know, they can take care of with the time that they have.
It all depends. If garden is your main hobby, like for instance, my father was a busy pediatrician, and I mean he really didn't have much leisure. But what leisure he had, he was out in his garden building stone walls and digging up the soil and planting asparagus beds, you name it. And so for him, his release was to knock himself out gardening. But that, you know, that isn't the case for everybody. You know, maybe they play tennis or golf or something instead, but still like to have some flowers and vegetables. I think the key is just to keep it a reasonable size.
Hmm. Well, what's now the first thing that we're going to be able to do and when? For people who are now really getting jazzed, you know, where can we start?
Just start seeds indoors. You know, you can start your leek seedlings or your celery root, or if you're a flower gardener, start some delphiniums or larkspurs, pansies, some of the things that have to be started way ahead. And just that fiddling with the soil is, you know, sometimes will satisfy that urge.
It's very therapeutic.
Getting outdoors, though, you know, there's always going to be some gorgeous day. When you just have to go out, I think a kind of a spring cleanup is a good idea. If you're like me, there's always a few garden stakes that still need to be pulled up, or even if you rake the lawn, a lot of the leaves have blown back in, and so maybe you give it a little raking and kind of remember what's there, see what might be coming up. If you've planted some things like witch hazel or early Daphne miserium, one of those, you might even see some flowers in March.
And there are some things, and I don't know how you feel about this. Some of the first sort of things that flower that you can cut and bring inside and force, and you can get some.
Oh, that's always fun.
Some flowers, but I guess I'm not really quite sure exactly how to do that. How do you know sort of what to do and what conditions will get them? Like forsythia, for example.
Well, I think you have to wait till the buds have started to swell a little bit. On a warm day, I think it's probably a little more encouraging for the plants. But forsythia, any of the fruit trees, apples, peaches, plums, anything like that, are good forcing plants. Quinces, ornamental quinces, are great to force. What else?
Actually, even sometimes just having a maple tree or something.
Yeah,
it's just nice to see a little green. So I think, you know, this is certainly that time of year where you could do some pruning. And so you may just decide you want to keep some of those prunings and bring them inside and force them on. I think that's
right.
A good way to get it through this last
year. A lot of plants that bloom in the spring, they'll say, well, don't prune those because you'll sacrifice some blooms. But if there are some gawky branches you really want to prune off to help the shape of the plant, then you could look on it as a harvesting bouquets rather than a sacrificing of.
There you go.
Yeah. And it's just as simple as trimming the branch, bringing it in, and sticking it in water, or is there more to it than that?
Lukewarm water helps. Uh-huh. Some people are really fanatic. They'll fill their bathtubs and go in to take a bath, and it's completely filled with crabapple. And that definitely will bring them on, but that's maybe extreme for most people. But usually just bring him in a warm room and water will do it.
Huh.
Yeah, believe it or not, I actually saw somebody put some pussy willows in the toilet. And then took a picture and then sent me the picture. So I don't know what that meant, but
some people just have unusual sense of humor,
to be the
I guess.
Closest thing with water in it, I think, is what it was. It was
okay. We have a minute or two left here. If somebody wants to call real quick and talk with our guests, Barbara Damrosch, Sandy Mason, maybe one more time you want to run down just the basic information about the Garden Day.
Right.
So people want to
Garden Day is right. Garden Day is this Saturday. It is at the Park Inn and Conference Center there on North Cunningham. It runs from 8:30 to 5. Lots of great sessions. Certainly Barbara Damrosch will be there as our keynote speaker, as well as doing another program on fresh food from your garden year-round, and lots of other great speakers. So I think it'll be a great day for people. And they can give us a call at 217-333-7672, and we'll be glad to register.
Okay. And for people who are interested in reading some more of our guests' work, you can, coming soon, a new version of Theme Gardens. There's the Garden Primer. There's some others that she's authored or co-authored, so you can head to the bookstore or the library and look for them. And you can get excited about get down there working in
That's
the
right.
Area. And Sandy, of course, will be back again next month. Mm-hmm. And then so from now on, she'll be here once a month. And also, we do have this other program called Illinois Gardener that's on our television station, WILL-TV, Thursday nights at 7. So yet another opportunity year-round to have questions about gardening. Well, Ms. Damrosch, thanks very much for talking with us.
Thank you. My pleasure.
We should have some interesting weather for you this weekend. We're told that it's going to be in the 50s on Saturday, and there could be thunderstorms.
Oh.
So just for variety's sake.
Exciting.
So we'll see you then.
Okay, look forward.
And thank you, Sandy.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.